Welcome to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. Six-time national champion bodybuilder, one-on-one peak performance coaching specialist, Mass Machine Nutrition Supplement Company owner, and speaker Skip LaCour offers his expert advice on training, nutrition, and motivation that will help you take your efforts to the next level. He also interviews the most interesting and passionate people in the bodybuilding and fitness world so you can learn from their knowledge and success too.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this bodybuilding and fitness podcast. I am Skip LaCour, and during this special series of podcasts, I am bringing you the most interesting and passionate people in bodybuilding and fitness. Now, there's a lot of reasons why I'm bringing these particular individuals to you. The main point is that there's something that you can learn from them. And I'm excited because I want to learn from the individuals who I'm bringing onto these series of podcasts. The other thing, it's a prerequisite of mine, they're leaders. They step up, give their opinion. They're paving a new path in our niche of bodybuilding and fitness. And that's something that I really admire. Our guest today, he's really done something unique in this culture of bodybuilding and fitness. He is an unusual candidate to come in here and create such a stir. His name is Mike Pulcinella. Now, Mike is a filmmaker, but what you're going to really find inspiring is his story. We're all looking for what we were put on this earth to do, what we can do and earn a living and live a passionate lifestyle doing it. And Mike has definitely done that. So welcome to this Bodybuilding and Fitness podcast. Mike, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Skip. Thanks for having me on. Hey, you know, you don't have to ask me twice to talk about my passion. In fact, you may have to stop me at some point as we get going.
That's why I want you on here. I mean, people are just drawn to passion. That's why I've been drawn to you. We've had a lot of conversations in the past about what may seem like questions and topics about fitness reps and sets, but we always get into the personality, and that's what I want to bring out here. Let's start with you. How did you... You know, I hope you don't find this offensive, but you don't look like some hardcore bodybuilder. But how did you make such a mark? How did you get into this niche and make such an impact? How did you arrive? What's your story?
It was a combination of accident and intention.
Okay.
My story goes like this. I've always been a very creative person. I was a musician for 20 years. I dabbled in art as a teenager and journalism. And I always had some sort of creative project going on in my life. And after I stopped playing music, I really had nothing going on. I had a video camera sitting around the house. My brother was coming out of his retirement. He's in his late 30s and was going to get back into competitive bodybuilding. At the same time, I had had a double hernia operation, which really laid me out for a while. And I lost a lot of weight. So my brother said, look, I'm going to help you build back up, but I'm going to show you how the bodybuilders do it. I had been working out all my life. Our father was into physical fitness and all. He taught us, you know, to be healthy and to lift weights. I had been doing that my whole life, but not like really hardcore like a bodybuilder.
You never thought about entering a contest, even though your brother Dave was really into it. Never thought about it.
And he would say to me, you know, you've really got a good frame. I think you could really do it if you applied yourself. But I just didn't have that seed, that spark deep inside that most bodybuilders have that drives them to really push themselves to the limit. I just didn't have it for that particular thing.
Right. Okay.
For something else, it turns out. So he helped me build myself back up. And it was amazing. You know, I really learned how to train for the first time. I learned how to eat for the first time. And I went from about 155 pounds to about 190 or so.
And how tall are you?
I'm 5'10".
Okay.
So I'm a little bit taller than my brother.
All right.
And it was exhilarating. I was still far from being a bodybuilder, but it was an exhilarating feeling to transform my body like that. And I got the attention of women. All kinds of great things were happening for me. And then he's getting ready to go and do this contest. And I thought to myself, my family doesn't really know what he does to transform himself. And he had been doing it for other people too. You know, he's a fitness and dietary consultant, not a trainer that goes out on the floor, but you come to him to learn what to do and get monitored. And he'd been doing that for years and transforming all sorts of lives. And my family had no clue what he did. So I said, I've got this video camera lying around the house. Let me challenge myself and see if I could make something that looked like a documentary about what he did. And then we would have a little party and show it to my family after he goes to this competition that he was planning on going to.
Right.
And so that's what we did. I was terrible at working the camera. I had no idea how to do it. I actually started to make the documentary as I went along. I figured, you know, you shoot something, you put it on the computer, you make it, you shoot something, and then by the time you're done, you have a documentary. Wrong. It doesn't work that way. You have to shoot everything first, get to the end, and then go back and put the whole thing together. So I did about a quarter of the thing and then discarded the whole thing and started over again. This ended up being called Raising the Bar.
Right.
And it was the story of him preparing for this Delaware State competition. Along the way, all these really interesting and dramatic things started to happen. He was fighting with his girlfriend. Their relationship was coming apart. He gets to the contest, and he's banned from competing in it because he had won it the last year, and there was some little clause in the rules that no one knew about that was just discovered that banned him from competing. Yeah. And there I am with the camera. We had shot for 20 weeks, et cetera, and so on. Eventually, it has a happy ending. I'm not going to give it away in case some of your listeners haven't seen it yet.
Raising the Bar, it's an entire trilogy, a series, right?
It ended up being a trilogy. Okay. Yeah, that's the point, is that we put this DVD together. We had the family party, and my brother had no idea what I was doing this whole time with the camera. He watched it, and he was blown away. He said, Mike, you've got to understand, no one in the bodybuilding world is doing this. No one is telling stories like this in bodybuilding. He says, it's all sets and reps training videos. And at the time, Mitsuru was the big guy in bodybuilding.
Right,
he definitely
right.
paved the way for everyone else because he was shooting these athletes when no one else was. And so
right.
some of this footage we have is precious and due to him. But he wasn't editing it like a filmmaker would.
Right, right.
By the way, I was completely unaware of all of that. I had not even ever seen a Mits video or film. I was not into bodybuilding per se. And I was not aware of the world of bodybuilding videos. I had no idea that what I was doing was unique. I was just trying to satisfy myself.
Right. And by the way, Mitsuru, he only dealt with the very elite
Correct.
IFBB professional bodybuilders. And they're all L.A. Maybe he'd go to their hometown. But it was just a very select few who
yes.
he'd film and create these VHS tapes, now DVDs back then. Before you continue, a lot of people listen passively on a podcast like this. They open up another browser. I want them to go right to the Raising the Bar trilogy series for the downloads that you have available. Why don't you tell them what that website is right now while you continue talking about?
Yeah, the website is MikePulcinella.com, MikePulcinella, MikePulcinella.com. And I've got it's called DVDs for sale page because that's what we originally sold. And I still make DVDs and I can still ship them if you want them. But we just recently put up all three of the trilogies as downloads for the computer. They're different resolutions too. For one price, you can get the high, mid, and low resolution.
Okay.
And the low resolution works on the phones really well. So and plus, there's another page on my website where you can watch a lot of sample clips and really see what it's about. And I really describe a lot about what Raising the Bar is about. And there's all kinds of sample clips, so you can really get a good idea of what's in store.
So with the traditional, just the guys training, Mitsuru, back in the day, he did kind of go to their home. But you, what's so great about your work is that you don't talk from someone who is single-minded in the bodybuilding culture. You take it out, it's like you're learning about it, you're dissecting it with a person who isn't in that world, which makes it so interesting, in my opinion.
It's an objective viewpoint.
Right.
It always was an objective viewpoint, an outsider looking in. And I think that made the difference because most bodybuilding videos were and still are being made by people who are big fans
yes.
and sometimes a little too much in awe of the people that they're shooting.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, what do you think is the biggest takeaway? What's the uniqueness, right? What differentiates your films? What's that common thing that you hear that you're told over and over and again about your films, your take on these bodybuilding videos?
I think it was it's the combination of my life experience as an artist, as a musician, as a pretend, you know, sort of wanting a wannabe journalist. All of these things that I had really explored, and I had done a lot of reading and you know, self-teaching. And by the time I got to make this video, I was bringing a lot to bear on it, a lot of thought about what is really going on here. And that's the thing. I'm always trying to look beyond the surface. I mean, we know what they're doing, but why are they doing it?
Right.
What's the motivation? What's really going on here? Why do this? And when you start asking those questions, you get different answers than just how do you do it? That's how do you do it is the question that's mostly answered in most bodybuilding videos.
You know, you do it in a very respectful manner. Right? You're a passionate guy. You admire the passion, but you don't just give this whole bodybuilding and training lifestyle a pass. You ask really important questions along the way that, you know, sometimes I don't know if the bodybuilders have a good answer for it. You're making everybody observing this think.
And I'm really trying not to come from a biased point of view. I'm not trying to make them look like heroes, but I'm also not trying to make them look bad either. Because, yes, you know, what high-level bodybuilders do is sometimes risky and dangerous, but so is high-level anything. Anytime a human being tries to push himself beyond the norm, he runs the risk of failed relationships or health problems or even death. I mean, you know, if you want to drive, you know, a race car around the track at 200 plus miles an hour, you're risking death every day. And I don't know how that's any different than a bodybuilder, you know, taking massive amounts of drugs to do something extraordinary. So I don't put them in two different categories.
Yeah, no, like I said, I think you do a very respectful job of presenting both points of view, bringing out a lot of questions that really need to be answered, and that it widens the audience of who you appeal to because they're asking those questions or they want to ask those questions that you're bringing up in the different topics. I'm curious, my journey, evolution, has been, you know, kind of getting into it, kind of thinking the whole thing's weird to totally devoting my life. And then I've been stepping out of it, still involved with fitness, you know, so I have a certain unique view of it. I'm curious, what is it about the lifestyle that draws most people to it? In your opinion, if you can kind of sum it up, I know it's not the same for everybody, but it's generally probably there's patterns that you see. I'm curious, what draws them into this culture and this dedication, lifestyle?
You're right. It is different for just about everyone, but there is some common thread. And I actually get this answer from my brother himself, who I think in the first one said something about, you know, we're all sick in some way. We're damaged. I have found that at the core of most bodybuilders' drive is some sort of trauma or damage. My own brother was a very skinny little kid, picked on relentlessly. Right? He built himself up so that wouldn't happen. A lot of female bodybuilders have been violently or sexually abused at some point in their lives. And so they build a shell of muscle. That will never happen to me again, is what their drive is. And then, of course, it turns into something else. They're not thinking that every day.
No, not at all. Right.
But it's still what is at the base of what really drives them. I know a few people, male and female, who were drug addicts, heroin and other things. And in order to stay away from that, they turn their addictive tendencies toward weightlifting and bodybuilding. And as long as they can maintain that kind of energy towards bodybuilding, they can stay away from the drugs, from those drugs.
Right, right. Let me ask you something. I definitely agree with you. When you gave three examples of why.
And overall, though, I just want to add one more. Not everyone is sick. Sometimes it's just empowerment. It fucking feels good. It feels great to be strong and big and have people look at you. I mean, that just feels good in it, and you want more and more of that. There's nothing wrong with that either.
Well, you know, you use that term sick. I know what you mean by that. That's not necessarily that's not such a demeaning word. I mean, we're all challenged in some way, shape, or form, and there's right. not – it's not black and white. You're either sick, really horrible, bad. You know, there's different shades of gray, which, you know, I want to get into you. The black
well,
and white.
Don't the very devout Christians believe we are born sick and must struggle to become well?
Yeah, I know. That's a question. I don't know if I can answer that one for you. But you know,
so that the concept of there is an inner sickness with that I am now working to fix, I think resonates with a lot of people who have faith.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the thing about it is the black and white mentality. You know, again, I can tell you this, that applies to me. I wasn't sexually abused or picked on as a kid, but trauma comes in a lot different ways. And, you know, you use those specific examples, being picked on, you know, sexually abused, some other things. It all comes down to, like you said, trauma. Again, there's many different degrees to it. And, you know, trauma by definition is something that you perceive as bad for you. It's something that wasn't your fault. It was done to you, and it was done unexpectedly. That's, you know, and so the big overriding feeling, emotion that a lot of people who have suffered trauma, whether in the bodybuilding and fitness world or not, is control.
Yes.
Control that they lost somewhere along the way, or they felt that they lost. And again, it doesn't black and white. It doesn't have to be something horrible, right? It's just your perception as a kid when we don't have, you know, we don't have any life experience, and we just, our perception was something traumatic. And it's that control of our bodies, our schedules, our time, not putting our faith and trust in other people, and we can feel good about ourselves. Wouldn't you agree that that's the big overriding bundle that you can put all these specific examples into?
Absolutely. And now that you make me think of it, you know, that was what was so exhilarating about my rebuilding after the operation. I mean, something happened to me that was beyond my control. I was weakened by it. And then my brother showed me that I could take back control and actually make the body that I wanted to make, you know, and become healthy again and bigger and more muscular.
Let me get
Let
me get you to a big, tough question, not to throw a wet blanket on all this passion, but you looked at this from a different angle. You've seen some really hardcore people in fitness, and they feel so good about what they do, that control in their life gaining, and they do it this way. Just like everything in life, there's sacrifices you make. Everything you do, there's good and there's bad. What bodybuilder and fitness competitors, especially the better you get praised and put on a pedestal for your level of dedication. My question is, can that be and then this is another example about addictions. Is it trading one addiction for another? Do you see it having them get to a dead end in their life where it served them well to get them out of a certain level of pain, but it's going to, if they don't make changes, they're going to have some long-term pain in the future. I mean,
absolutely. I mean, that could be said of many, many things.
Sure.
But, you know, it's not just bodybuilding that brings the accolades. Just about anything we do in life is a plea for, look at me, look at me. I mean, why are we doing this podcast? Why did I make my films? So that people would look at us or our work and be inspired by it. And that's always a good feeling. So I wouldn't put, you know, a negative spin on the fact that bodybuilders, like so many other people, like any artist, want people to recognize their achievement.
Sure, sure.
You are correct, though, that it's like other sports, it can take its toll on the body. And yes, people stay with it sometimes a little too long.
Right, and I think that's what I want to focus on is, see, I don't, I'm not in the bodybuilding world when I do talk to individuals. I'm at a distance, right? I don't hang around a lot of bodybuilders. I'm always curious. You know, after you put your heart and soul in it for 10, 15 years of total mastery, what comes next when you get a little bit older? Now, I know your brother Dave, and I want to have Dave on a podcast. He's really interesting. He's lengthening his career. He's maximizing his career, finding ways to provide value and entertainment, and I know you're helping him with that. I have to tell you, to me, it's sometimes sad when I'm on Facebook. We're all connected by social media now, and there are former great bodybuilders or fitness people, they're hanging on. Their identity is still that bodybuilder. It doesn't look from, you know, who am I to judge, but I don't know how much they've progressed on in their life. Do you know what I'm talking about? You probably, as you're filming and you're in these gyms, you probably, hey, that guy used to be an amazing bodybuilder 20 years ago or so. And I know you're a student of human nature, personal development, right? You have to be making these observations yourself.
I am. I know a musician. This is the same concept you're talking about. I know a musician who, back when I was playing in the 90s, had been already playing for a little while, and he was this just amazing guitarist. And I remember talking to him one night, and I asked him, you know, so how did you decide to really devote yourself to music? Because I was playing music, but I was still working a job. I was playing it safe. That's all he did was play music. And he says, I really couldn't do anything else. I couldn't hold down a job. I had to do this because I couldn't do anything else. I think there are some bodybuilders who really get drawn to it because they weren't able to do anything else as good as this in their lives. So that when they get to this point, they haven't developed other aspects of their life.
Yeah.
And then they suddenly realize that they had put all their eggs in one basket, so to speak.
Right. And that's what made them great. That's why we admire them all over the world. The challenging part is they're not going to, most of the time, I mean, you're an example of someone who can do your passion and earn a living. They're not able to do that. Most of them aren't, right? So it kind of leaves a hole in that particular area. Intimate relationships. I don't know what your opinion about that, but when you're done with fitness, I mean, those are the other aspects of your life. Career, you talked about that. The financial part of life, that part of the career, but you got to worry about that. And I don't know, everybody's different, but I think that kind of connection in people is an important part that a lot of times bodybuilders, certainly me in the past, did not put a lot of importance in. And I almost felt power as a Spartan or whatever, you know, but you got to somehow make that turnaround, you know, later on. I wonder, have you seen a lot of successful transitions? And have you saw a lot of poor transitions or non-transitions?
The people that survive after they can no longer compete are the ones who have all along been preparing for that.
Okay.
My brother himself was developing this business of his all the while he was a bodybuilder. In fact, you know, it was he had this business to enable him the freedom to be a bodybuilder. This is why there was sort of a symbiotic relationship. That's why he took some time off in his 30s from competing. He never took time off from being a bodybuilder. He's always been big since he was a teenager. But he took time off in his 30s from competing to really build the business. And then once he felt he had it cruising along, he got back into it for a time, late 30s into his 40s, you know, that time where I was making the DVDs. But he was always planning for his future. He was always thinking about, what am I going to do for the long haul? And I think it's those people that aren't paying attention to that, think it's going to go on, that the ride's going to go on forever, that they suddenly find themselves face to face with reality.
How is he doing in the personal department? I know that you could cite everywhere in society that may be a challenge for people. Do you find it particularly challenging in the bodybuilding and fitness world, right? I'm just curious, how is he making that transition? And, you know, I don't want this to make about your brother Dave. We can get Dave and he can speak for himself. So we can talk in generally, what do you see, you being such a...
Well, I can talk a little specifically about him because there is this perception when you look at the Raising the Bar series. I mean, we did kind of focus on the disintegration of his relationship with his girlfriend at the time, Jennifer, who was a competitor, but then was losing her passion for it, in which that was pulling them apart. And so because of this, he's sort of seen as a guy who can't hold on to relationships. That's really not true. He's had many relationships throughout the years, and several of them have been long-term. He was married at one point, and he's now with a great girl that I think he's going to stick with for the rest of his life. But without that, you know, the competition hanging over his head, you know, some of the pressures that formerly, you know, drove him to have relationship problems just simply aren't there. And plus, she's into it too. You know, she's into bodybuilding and fitness. And so they're of a like mind. They're, you know, they're cooking their meals. They're still doing all that stuff, you know, cooking six meals a day and all that stuff. And they're together and supporting each other in that.
I guess, you know, what I've been trying to put these pieces together and help a lot of people. That's what I do now, right? I'm not about helping people with the sets and reps. I'm really passionate about people putting the rest of their lives together. They are drawn to me because of what I accomplish, my big muscles, but witness my evolution, they want some of that, right? Life coaching, yeah. Although I'm not a big fan of that term, right? But do you find that the same traumas that brought them to be so dedicated and so amazing, so awesome, with the structure and the discipline and the isolation that's required to be an amazing fitness, bodybuilding, fitness personality, that there's certain aversion to intimacy and connection?
I don't particularly see that. In fact, I know another bodybuilding couple that are, it's one of the best, longest term married couples I've ever seen. So in love.
Sure. No. And that's sure. There's always exceptions that we're just talking in generality. Everybody's different. Every situation's different, but there are commonalities, even the way you described, Dave's relationship. Oh yeah. He's had many, many girlfriends, right? Well, that's a certain, probably a way to look at relationships, how you prioritize them. Right. And I guess that's understandable. Sacrifices being made. Have you seen when they don't compete anymore? You know, I'm kind of trying to get what you witness the mentality when it's all said, done, when the competing's done. Can they just say, okay, competing's done, and boom, all of a sudden they put it up on the top of the prior list and the transition's smooth, or do they still struggle afterwards?
I think the smart bodybuilders can apply the lessons they've learned from bodybuilding to anything they want to do in life. And that's always been one of the things that has really impressed me about this sport, is the mental aspect of deciding to do something. And then that decision creates the vision, and the vision creates the plan of action. And I think that, and I've watched this with my own brother, that once his competitive days were over, he applied that same sort of decision-making process to, now I want to have good relationships. Because of that, I can visualize what a good relationship looks like, and I have to do this, this, and this to make that happen. Yeah. And he applies the lessons of bodybuilding to that, to his business, to even playing the piano.
Do you think that that's an exception to the rule? Or you called him a smart bodybuilder, right? So I would, when someone, you put him in an elite category, that means I would say like the top 10%, just throwing out a number that, based on no facts, whatever, right? That means there's a bulk of the people drawn into a particular area. They're not as effective making that, you know. So instead of focusing on the smart, I guess I want your definition of what you generally see. Or maybe you don't focus on it. Maybe you don't.
I think you're under the misapprehension that I am constantly surrounded by, and I'm in the body.
I guess that is true. I know that, and we'll talk about the work you do for different supplement companies, different personalities. I get the impression you're in a gym a lot to master your craft, right? So that you're entrenched in there. So yeah, you know, I may be misled by it because you've produced so much work in that genre.
I really only have intimate knowledge of a very few bodybuilders, and that is my brother, Ty Green, Victor Martinez, and Marco Rivera and his wife, Sara Robles, who are a great, great bodybuilding couple. I don't really hang out with a lot of bodybuilders.
Okay.
I work with a good handful of them. And in general, what I'm saying about how they apply the decision-making process to anything they want to do does apply to all of them.
Right. Right. You know? Yeah.
The general bodybuilder type, who I see a lot on Facebook, but I don't really know.
Okay.
I'm not so sure how they're working their relationships.
Okay. All right. I was hoping maybe, and not just relationships, that whole transition, what insights that you may have there.
I work with bodybuilders, but I don't necessarily want to hang out with them.
Okay. And why is that? That's interesting.
because I'm not really a fan of the sport. I don't.
That's interesting. Some more. Tell me about that.
I'm not against the sport at all.
No, I understand.
But I'm not a rabid fan of the sport. In other words, people ask me, so what are your predictions for the Arnold? I can't even really tell you who's going to be in it this year because there's no one in it that I'm shooting.
And so what draws you to this? I guess we've kind of alluded to it many times throughout this podcast so far. What's the draw for you? Because you earn a significant living from this niche.
What draws me to bodybuilding is its extreme nature. Uh-huh. The fact that in order to do it and really do it well, you have to do 24/7, give it your all, give it everything you've got. I mean, like powerlifting and strongman, I like that kind of stuff. I like watching it. I like shooting it. It's really interesting. Those guys don't really dedicate themselves as completely as bodybuilders do, because they can pretty much eat anything they want and lots of it. You know, they don't have to watch the diet. They don't have to watch how they look. They just have to perform in short bursts, you know, a few times a week. That's not the same as bodybuilders who are living with this thing day in, day out. That I find fascinating because, not because of what they do, but because of why they're doing it and how it affects the rest of their lives. This is what was interesting to me about my brother. And it was what it's interesting to me about Kai Greene and going to the, you know, the Olympia with him and, yes. and studying all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, who's actually winning the contest, again, if I'm not shooting it, I don't particularly care.
Right, right. Well, that's what makes
– because I don't have it, I don't have a psychic investment in it, a psychological investment in it.
Right.
If I'm not actually shooting it.
Well, that's what makes you unique. That's what differentiates you from all the others.
I'm still really objective about the sport. I do find it interesting. But you know what? If someone was rabidly into, you know, quilt making contest, I would find that interesting too. And I would like to see what drives someone to do something like that.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Hey, Mike, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about all your current projects, what you have planned in the future. I'm even going to ask you, what do you think about that body of work, Generation Iron? I have some opinions about that, and I want to talk to you about that. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This bodybuilding and fitness podcast is brought to you by Skip LaCour's Mass Machine Nutrition, the highest quality and most effective bodybuilding supplements and sports nutrition products on the market. Supreme. Clean. Mass Machine Nutrition. Check out the entire line at www.massmachinenutrition.com. Skip LaCour's Mass Machine Nutrition is also available at the world's number one online supplement store, bodybuilding.com.
We are back with bodybuilding filmmaker extraordinaire, Mike Pulcinella. So, Mike, you know, I want to expand a little bit about what you talked about before, that it surprises people that you're not this rabid bodybuilding fan. You care who's going to win the next Mr. Olympia or Arnold Schwarzenegger Classic. Tell me about that. Why do you think that throws them off?
I think because most people are, the fans anyway, who are watching my videos are fans. I mean, right. And they are in awe of these guys. And don't get me wrong, you know, I think that what these guys do to transform their bodies is truly amazing. But it was never something I was that interested in my life, except as it pertained to telling their life stories.
Right.
It was so extreme. So I think the fans think that I feel incredibly lucky to just be around these bodybuilders. I do feel lucky, don't get me wrong, that I am able to shoot with them and that they trust me. But I was never really that impressed by the bodies. I mean, I was shooting Kai Greene for the first time up in Brooklyn, and I remember posting something about it on Facebook or whatever we were posting on at that time. And people were like, oh my God, what was it like? What was it like to be around him? He was just a really kind of soft-spoken guy who was working out really hard. Yeah, he had big muscles, but it didn't blow me away to be standing next to him. But you see, you know, these young kids, and they meet him, and they're literally shaking because they're standing next to him.
Right, right.
That
right.
You know, I was never that way. Again, I think that's my strength.
No, I definitely agree. One of your strengths, too, is how you've taken command of social media. In our niche of bodybuilding and fitness, I mean, there's these rising personalities just because they put themselves out there. They let us know what they're thinking, like you have. I mean, back in the old days, you know, the niche that you've carved within our niche, you know, the slice that you've taken, that might have been impossible if you didn't master a lot of these social media skills that you're really good at. I mean, do you see it that way?
I absolutely do. My success is a perfect confluence of just being in the right place at the right time, some luck, let's call it opportunity, and a lot of preparation. There was a day in 2007, I remember this, because I had been posting some clips from Raising the Bar. One, I think I had only done one at that point. I was working on two, and I was posting some clips, and they were starting to get some notoriety. And, you know, people had suggested that since my brother was going to the national level, that I follow him and make a follow-up. And I was working on it. And I remember deciding to myself in 2007, I'm going to make this happen. I want to do this as a, I don't know if I said it as a career to myself, but I want to do it all the time. I love this. Uh-huh. I love what we're doing here. And in 2007, I made a decision that every day I would do something.
Oh, wow.
Or a bunch of somethings that would advance me, even ever so slightly, toward the goal of being able to work on video all day. And since that day in 2007, I can tell you without hesitation that there has never been a day where I have not done something in support of that vision. Even on vacation, I'll check my emails, things like that. Things that we all do as business people. I considered it a business. And I also had a social media rule that I call no question left unanswered.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
No matter what platform it comes to me on, if someone asks me a question, I will eventually answer it. And I have, so far, without having to hire a secretary or anything like that, I have fulfilled that.
Yeah, that's a great that's a great life lesson, a great business lesson that, you know, a lot of people, you know, don't see. They see people's success and they don't understand where it comes from. One thing that you do, which I really appreciate you being a leader, is, you know, you dish out the life lessons on social media too, above and beyond your particular niche.
Well, because I see how they apply. I really do. I mean, you know, the life lessons of what we call quote unquote positive thinking, and I hate that term, but you know, it's a catch-all for a lot of things, which really means, you know, decision, vision, action, work. And a lot of people forget those last two parts, the action and the work.
Right,
you know,
right.
I always say, you know, praying without action is just wishful thinking. You do have to pray. You do have to think about what you want to do, but then you have to translate that into sometimes back-breaking hard work and do it every day consistently until you get to that goal.
A lot of bodybuilders run into that dead end or that challenge. Not the elite bodybuilders who you work with. I don't know if I would put your brother in that category. See, some of the gentlemen you talked about, Kai Greene and Victor Martinez, I mean, those are amazing bodybuilders, and they focused on their body primarily, and it was able to draw so much attention and interest that someone hired you to go follow them around. Your
right.
brother is a different example. You know, he didn't have that type, so he created his own buzz, and you and he together, you carved your own niche, right? A lot of bodybuilders, they can't make money doing this, and they're frustrated. They're like, hey, my body's better than somebody else. I should be getting paid for everything that I'm doing. And then here you come in there, right, in their backyard, and you're able to do something they're
right.
not able to do. I bet you have a lot of advice for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Just start doing what you're doing. Be as good at Steve Martin says, just be undeniably excellent for a long time. And in this day and age, that means also being able to broadcast it on Facebook. But like I said, answer all questions that come your way. Just be undeniably excellent all the time without looking for a payback right away.
Yeah.
Because you'll eventually get it.
I think another
– maybe you're on the wrong track and maybe you need to change your course a little bit.
Right. I think that you talk about that wrong track. I think they miss something that's important. You tell me what you think about that is – you have to provide value
yes.
that it's not about you, that someone can take away with them. And it's more than inspiration, because there's a lot of people with great bodies that can be inspired. You talk about social media where, you know, I admire how you've taken control of it and you've made it work for you. All right. You've created a name, you've added value to people, and you've profited from it financially. Okay. But social media also makes those physiques boring. You have seen them, picture, done, right? I mean,
right.
If someone's ever gone to a bodybuilding show and they're not just a casual fan who looks at the pictures on the internet, you know, I don't care who your biggest star is. He's not going to mesmerize you for the whole 2 minutes he's on stage. I don't know if people, especially true now in this quick fix society that we have right now. I don't care how great his physiques are. We're bored. Let's move on. Right. So that physique all by itself probably isn't going to provide the value.
No.
All right. So they have to do something else. And I think that's where they stumble.
Yes. What are you providing for your viewer? What are you giving to your viewer? What are they walking away from that is valuable to them?
And it's not just being inspired, right?
Can
we throw that one out?
Inspired.
Okay.
I mean, and that's all well and good. You can create a high energy sort of inspiring workout video, but there's a million of those now.
Exactly.
I see far too many of these video blogs from the athletes, and they're really just talking about themselves. And yeah. then I did this, and I'm thinking about doing that next week, and maybe I'll cut my calories. And like, who cares?
Yeah.
And they think that people care.
Well,
they really don't.
Yeah. No, you know, man, I tell you, there's so many things that I think that your being helpful, this conversation can help out a lot of current fitness professionals. Maybe they're frustrated because they have achieved an amazing physique, or they're just starting out and they're getting to their game plan. Let me just tell you guys, in my opinion, I'd think that a good 75%, 80%, I throw out these numbers. They're just off the top of my ass, Mike. There's no research behind them, right?
Estimations.
Right, right. And that they, it's real, all about them.
Yeah.
It's all about them, but they don't think it's all about them. In their mind, well, they want to hear this. And then what happens is that they get a lot of likes, or views, or whatever it may be, that doesn't translate into money. And then they get frustrated because it appears to them that they have so many fans or followers or likes, and it's not equating to money.
It doesn't equate to money.
Right.
Everyone, you know, to each person, you know, your own story is interesting.
That's true.
It is true. And I get this a lot of people. They contact me, man, you know, you should really make a documentary about me. And I say, why? What's interesting about you? Well, I'm working really hard to be a national level bodybuilder, but I also, you know, I'm a regular guy and I hold down a job and I have a family. I said, okay, would you watch that about somebody else? Would you watch that sort of ordinary, regular story? Is that something you want to see portrayed as somebody else? No, of course you don't. I said, what has happened in your life that is so amazing and so special that you looked around and you went at least two or three times in the last year and you went, God, I wish there was a camera crew here right now.
Right.
That's
right.
The kind of life you have to have, you know, for to make a documentary about. But you know, to them, everyone's story is interesting. And to them, their struggle is the struggle. And it is. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be interesting to other people.
Where other people can take that into their heart and be inspired. I think we're,
right.
You know, we all, like you talk about, we have our challenges. We have some have traumas. It's a very interesting story. But one thing that I emphasize, because I coach people about, you know, their story and their pain. To turn that into becoming a leader, because there are certain strategies to become a leader. And then, you know, how to profit from it. It's an intense program that I do. You know, one thing about it, you know, it's nice that you're transparent and you're open about your challenge. But, you know, there's a whole personal development part of that that you have to be inspiring. How did you overcome it, right? And not just because you had muscles, right? Tell me how you had this challenge that other people have that they can relate to, but how you did more with it. There, you know, and that should be inspiring to you to even work at it. I mean, part of the reason why, you know, I really pushed myself as a bodybuilder is because I knew that the better I became, the more of a leader that I could be respected, the more people would read my work. But I did provide strategies and inspiration with work, and my body became the billboard for the work that I did.
The billboard,
right?
That's good. The billboard,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but I had to become good to so they would see my work, right?
Exactly.
So it's like they have to put more pressure on themselves to become this exemplary example of overcoming the challenge, not just, hey, I have this challenge. You probably have this a lot of times. You kind of alluded to. I've had a lot of people over the years. Hey, you know, can you sponsor me? You know, with Mass Machine Nutrition, my company. Mm-hmm. And well, why would I do that, right? Yeah. And well, you know, I could appeal to a lot of people. I do this, like you said. I do this and I do this. I go, well, you know, this is to everybody out there, and I'm sure Mike, you can agree with that. Don't even write that letter to a supplement company.
It's hard to get sponsored for potential.
Right, exactly. Go out
almost
there,
impossible.
Get your following, get your social media. Look what Mike is doing. Give them your personality. Give them some words of wisdom. Give them a flavor of who you are. Show them how to overcome, you know, and then come back to me so I can give you my supplements, give you a t-shirt, and boom, there's a built-in fan base who can buy my product right away because of your influence, right?
Right, right. You know, I started shooting in 2004. I made that decision in 2007. I didn't get a career in this industry until 2011.
Wow.
And from 2007 to 2011, while holding down a regular job, I was doing something every day to move towards that. But if somebody had told me, well, it's going to take you, you know, from 2007 to 2011 before this actually pays off, would I have done it? I hope I would have still done it, but it would be daunting to have to think it's going to be that many years before this pays off.
Right.
Sometimes many years of work before it pays off.
Well, I want to talk to you about if you had a business strategy, because what I find is people in this business, you know, I think you loved it so much that you would do it for free, right? And then you got paid for your efforts. And a lot of people understand that model. The challenge is you have so many people doing that. I mean, you're unique. You found a unique place in this industry. Again, this is when you focus on the body, and everybody has a body, even though you think your body is better or you have more trophies, it's still the body.
Right.
Right. And so they give it away for free. And then it's almost like get angry that why aren't I getting paid for this? Right.
Right.
Maybe, you know, from the day they start lifting weights or as soon as possible, they don't have this, I'll just do it for free mentality. They're putting a plan together,
yeah,
you know, for value, right? Instead of, you know, working for 10 years and then, hey, where's the money that comes with it? So I'm wondering, even at the beginning when you loved it and you did it for free, at least in the back of your mind, even though you weren't demanding it or expecting it right away, was there a plan to monetize your efforts? Was it built in right from the beginning?
The only plan to monetize the efforts was in the creation of the DVDs. I knew that once I had these fans who were interested in the first Raising the Bar, I knew that if I could complete a second and a third, that I could at least sell enough copies to make back some of the expenses, if not all, of, you know, that I had put into them.
Right.
So, you know, I wasn't doing it to get rich. I wasn't doing it to get a career at that point. I was just trying to make a little money back so that I could say that, it paid for itself.
Right.
You know, the new camera and the time spent and the travel and all that kind of stuff, that it sort of paid for itself. And it did. It did. So the DVDs at that point were the monetary plan.
Right. So that was the starting point. I want you to tell everybody all the different revenue sources and all the opportunities it's created for you, some of your other projects, what you've done in the past. You talked about the Kai Train with Kai Green series. I want you to talk about that, how that came about, how your association with supplement companies. I know that you're turning away opportunities from supplement companies. And I'll tell you personally, if you lived closer to me on the West Coast, I mean, I would have you do my Man Formation Leaderships, my personal development. I would have you doing all kinds of work over here. I bet you're just flooded with opportunity.
And I do have to turn away a lot, and it kills me to do it because, you know, my uncle, who was a great businessman and built up a family printing business where I was working until I was 50 years old, said, never say no, never say no, just do it. And if you have to work overtime and buckle down and get some help, you do it. You never say no, but I simply had to say no. In this particular case.
So tell people about some of your projects that you've done in the past, you've got going on now, and some of your future projects that you're excited about.
Well, one of the best past projects was when, because of the clips I had released from Raising the Bar, got the attention of Gerard Dente from Muscle Meds and MHP. He wanted me to work with Victor Martinez and Kai Green. That was my big break, my big opportunity. And when I went to Las Vegas with Kai Green for his first ever Olympia, you know, that became the documentary Overkill, also for sale on MikePulcinella.com.
Right, right.
That is one of my favorite achievements and a very unique bodybuilding video, again, for several reasons. One, because it's an objective look. And two, because when I went out there, Kai was not doing well and everything was going wrong for him. So what should have been this triumphant sort of thing that everyone expected was really a man struggling. And that resonated so powerfully with people who had done this before, who had tried and had maybe fallen short, just like Kai did that year, that first year, that it became kind of an iconic documentary in the industry. Again, but turning a negative into a positive. You know, I came home thinking, my God, this guy is struggling. He's not doing well. You know, how am I going to make something out of this? It turned out to be the best thing that could have happened to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and for Kai too, that vulnerability. Right. He
hates it though. I don't want to say he hates it, but I mean he's not that proud of that documentary. It was not him at his best, and I understand that. He and I have spoken about it, and he understands the power of it. But I mean,
the power meaning that when you're transparent and vulnerable, it connects people more than you. You're right.
Right, transparent and vulnerable. It showed much more than a guy who was in control and on top of things and throwing the weights around the gym and, you know, and winning the show. That's all well and good, but it doesn't teach you much about life. But this was riveting to see, because here was this guy who was should have been at the top of his game, and he was really struggling every step of the way. He says, you know, that was supposed to be my pumping iron. And, you know, Arnold is a hero in pumping iron, and my pumping iron is me, you know, falling.
Right, right. Failing.
You know, so to him, that's not his proudest achievement.
Yeah, right. That's not how he's appreciative, but that's not how he wants this story to end, right?
No, that's not the story that he wanted to tell, and I understand that.
Now, do you still work with him? Because he's very he's awesome on social media, and there's some team working by that. I have to tell you is that, you know, all the things that back in my career that I was able to do, I had the first online journal back in 1998, all the things that I did. Wow. I'm looking at all this. You know, and again, you know, being the drug-free body, but the really small, I mean, the big fish in the small pond that gave me a little bit of recognition. I mean, I had to be creative, like you're being creative, right?
Yeah.
And then I see, God, all this opportunity in social media that, you know, really, you know, nobody's, if it's, you get a natural bodybuilder or any bodybuilder with a personality and a unique style, it doesn't have to be a natural bodybuilder. I mean, I see that, but it could be like a Boston Lloyd. Man, they can kill it, right?
Right.
And all that opportunity. Kai Greene is doing a really good job, and he's got a team around him filming and editing, just even a 15-second clip. Yes. Are you still working with him? Is there a team? How much does he direct all that?
I don't know how much he directs. I mean, it's all coming from him.
You okay.
know what I mean? It's all coming from his philosophy. But he has gathered around him a team, and this is not a Muscle Meds team, so that's why I'm a salaried employee of MHP and Muscle Meds.
Okay. So you work exclusively for them?
Exclusively for them.
Okay.
And he has his own team, which is creating stuff for his own website, and that's
I see. So this is Kai Greene Inc. They're following him around and they're editing.
Right.
Oh wow! See, you don't get that impression, and I'm sure he likes to keep it like, you know,
I've doubted
the projects. Right,
and
right, right, right.
The team should be an expression of him.
Sure,
and it is.
Sure.
It is. I know his, the head of the team. He actually worked with us at Muscle Meds. He was the athlete liaison. So
right.
He was the guy that would handle the athletes and set up the schedules and everything. And he became very close with Kai. And now he's his guy. They do everything together. And this guy, Adam, has created this team around Kai. And it's a juggernaut.
Yeah, they do a great job. Awesome
It's a juggernaut.
Job.
It really
awesome
is.
Job.
But I still work with him. And you were talking about the Train with Kai series. We just shot a new Train with Kai video about 2 weeks ago, and I'm in the editing phase of that right now. And I'm actually very proud of that series because it was really my invention.
Yes, groundbreaking. Groundbreaking.
Well, it was groundbreaking, and again, it was an instance of turning a negative into a positive. Because the concept was, let's make a training video series with Kai, where he talks to the audience and teaches them about the way he trains. Well, it's very hard to speak on camera into the camera. That's a very difficult thing to do well, and not everyone can do it. I mean, there are some standouts in the industry of people who do that, and they have fun doing it. But Kai was not that good at it when we were trying it. He wasn't himself. You know what I mean?
I see.
He would do it. He could do it. But I felt that he wasn't his true self. He would put on this kind of stiffer persona. I just don't think he was comfortable with it. So I came up with the idea of, let's find a young bodybuilder that Kai can help through a training session. That way he can forget about the cameras. He can focus his attention on this other person. And then we can just listen in, you know, the voyeuristic fly on the wall sort of thing, which is the way I do my documentaries.
Right, right.
So it was more comfortable for me as well.
Right. So he steps into his genius zone. He goes into a zone.
And I go into my zone.
His element. Awesome. Yeah.
And I'm going into my zone. And then we turned it into a contest, which was, you know, a great promotion for the brand. It turned into this big thing. And it was simply, at first, a problem, a way to solve a problem. The problem was that these videos weren't going to be that good if we were forcing him into a discomfort area. And myself, too. I don't even like shooting that way. By the way, I don't like when people talk into the camera. There's something about that that does not feel authentic to me. Uh-huh. It feels like because they are aware that talking to this machine, it sort of breaks the bubble of our concentration. I always have a hard time putting this into words. I just don't like it when people look into the camera. So my preference is for people to ignore the camera and us to act as passive listeners and watchers.
Okay, so you're a salaried employee for MHP, who also has Muscle Meds.
Right, and they're sister companies.
Right, okay. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Gerard Dente. He's taken a different approach. I mean, kind of creating, letting you go, and it's got to be helping his company tremendously. But I like his style. He's different from, you know, kind of the ego-based supplement company. He likes to stay behind the scenes, but still kick ass. I mean, do you see it that way too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the freedom that he has given me from day one is unprecedented. Unprecedented. First of all, he thinks in film terms. When we talk about projects and he talks about his vision, it sounds like he's describing an already done film. So he and I were on the same level with that sort of thing to begin with.
Yeah. He's quite a businessman. He comes from a family of businessmen, and he was bodybuilder second, right? So that's why he doesn't have to inject like a lot of supplement company owners, former bodybuilders. And I'm not talking about the signature series. I'm just talking about, you know, some guy you never knew, but now he's a supplement company. Or he's got to inject himself into the picture like, hey, does your supplement company owner, does he have big biceps like this? Like, that gives, like, who the hell cares? Like, the quality of your supplements has zero to do with how big your biceps are or how in shape you are. Right. I mean, nothing, right? But that's kind of their selling point. And it's coming from a guy who still does have big biceps and have a supplement company.
Yeah, I think, he looks great. But
the thing is that he understands a bigger purpose, which makes him different and unique and probably really a lot more successful in this business than taking the traditional bodybuilder turned supplement company odor approach. Yeah. Like, he doesn't need the spotlight. He lets his product do it.
He's never been interested. Yeah. And I've talked to him. Let me get you on camera a little bit. And we've done a few little interviews about specific products, but you've probably never even seen the videos. They were just small little things. He's just not interested in that. He's way too busy formulating and coming up with new ideas and talking to the team and everything. That's what he does. He loves to create these new products, you know, something with a little twist on it, you know?
Right, right. Well, tell me what do you guys have planned? What's your next project? What's your new style that we can't wait to see?
Well, you know, as far as Muscle Meds and MHP is concerned, you know, we are working on the Train with Kai video. That's going to be a really good one. It was a long shoot, so it's taking me a while to get it together. For MHP, I'm actually working on it's an instructional video with Yasara Robles, who's our premier bikini competitor, who I think she placed second at the Olympia last year, the year before. She is now pregnant, and we're going to do a pregnancy workout video with her, which should be interesting. And then after she's gives birth, we're going to show how she gets herself back into shape all the way back up to hopefully the Olympia stage again.
Right. Sounds good. Sounds interesting.
Which should, you know, really be a great instructional series for a lot of women out there, you know, who are going through the same exact thing.
Right.
So, you know, I know that doesn't sound that groundbreaking or anything, but that's interesting to me. And I really like working with her, and I have women friends who are interested in seeing this. So I'm interested in putting that together.
Awesome.
But the really exciting thing that I've been personally working on is Raising the Bar 4, the fourth installment of the series. I have been shooting since we ended when my brother retired from competitive bodybuilding. I had kept shooting a lot of different things, a lot of different stories behind the scenes of some of my shoots with Kai Green and Victor Martinez. My brother still has some stories to tell from the world of bodybuilding, and I'm I am weaving this all together into another documentary that I think is going to be really interesting and much more far-ranging than even the first three raising the bars. It digs into areas that are really non-bodybuilding related, but okay. then brings it all back to the bodybuilding world, relates everything back to the bodybuilding world. So if you're a fan of bodybuilding, I think you will still really like this, even though it goes off on some tangential topics, which I also think just everyone will find interesting. It's still in the formative stages. I have a ways to go yet. So please don't start asking me, when's it going to be done? I can't tell you. I work on it whenever I can. That, to me, is the most exciting thing that I'm working on right now.
Awesome. All right, Mike, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, I want to get to that question. I want to ask your opinion of Generation Iron. And then I'm going to ask you if, with all this talent that you have, do you have any plans on using your filmmaking skills outside of bodybuilding? Nothing to do with it, right? Especially as time goes on. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
So, you have your bodybuilding and training efforts going in the right direction. That's awesome. Are you now ready to take your entire life to the next level too? Sure, it takes a lot of focus and discipline to build a great body, but that's not going to automatically translate into an incredible overall life too, unless you have a clear-cut vision for exactly what you want for your life and an effective plan that you really believe in to make it happen. Maybe you've already realized this. Your body has improved dramatically. People compliment you all the time, but you still feel that there's something missing. What's your plan to become more than just a great body and create an amazing, balanced, overall quality of life that you can be proud of and confidently work toward? One-on-one peak performance coaching specialist Skip LaCour will help you channel all that your hard work, discipline, and abilities to become more than just muscles and help you build a life filled with confidence, passion, and purpose. You can have it all. Confidence in every social situation, wealth, opportunity, freedom, love, and connection, along with your impressive physical body and amazing health, when you know the strategies to put it all together and execute them on a continual basis. Go to SkipLaCourCoaching.com and see the different one-on-one life coaching plans Skip LaCour has to help you. Set up a free coaching session to see if this exclusive next-level one-on-one coaching program is right for you by sending Skip an email at Skip@SkipLaCourCoaching.com.
We are back with bodybuilding filmmaker, documentary, the creator of the Raising the Bar trilogy that you can get from Mike to download immediately to your computer, to your phone, all different formats, Mike Pulcinella. So Mike, you being a filmmaker, there's been a lot of buzz over the last year or so of the documentary that was supposed to be the next Arnold Schwarzenegger Pumping Iron, right? Generation Iron. I'm curious, as a filmmaker, what do you think about that? Did it deliver, in your opinion?
I'm going to need your help on this. And okay. First of all, I'm going to need you to sit down. Are you sitting down?
I'm sitting down.
All right, because I'm going to tell you something. I have not yet seen it.
Okay, well, that says something, don't you think?
Well, because I'm angry.
Okay.
From what I've seen, it makes me angry.
Okay. Tell me why it makes you angry.
Several reasons. I have seen a lot of preview clips and short clips. And there is at least a couple of sections with Kai Greene that look lifted verbatim from my series, my three-part series with Kai Greene called A Day in the Life, which I was shooting, which I had released about the time that they were shooting Generation Iron. And I believe that someone saw some of the things that I was doing with Kai in the Day in the Life series, and they just recreated that for Generation Iron. I mean, there's I may be completely off base on this, because, I mean, if you're going to follow Kai Greene around, as they did, you're going to encounter some of the same things that I did
exactly,
when I followed Kai Greene
exactly.
around those days. So I could be completely off base, but I saw this scene in the posing class, and it looked almost exactly like my scene from the posing class that was the first bad taste in my mouth. And then other parts that I've seen, I mean, I know these guys and I know the world of bodybuilding and I know that there's some great stories in there. And from what I saw, it just looked kind of contrived. I mean, I know Kai and I know that they had him put on a persona for this that's not really him. at least from the short clips that I've seen. And they're lighting him with the moody lighting and everything. And I know they're trying to make it dramatic. And I just don't, doesn't feel real to me. It felt like a presentation for the larger world outside of bodybuilding. Third is they made my life really difficult that year when they were shooting, because I got shut out of a lot of things, including the Olympia. We were no longer allowed to shoot at the Olympia because Generation Iron was shooting there. And I understand that. They probably paid a lot of money for the rights backstage and on stage to get those guys, you know, to be able to shoot. But then I couldn't even go. I was sitting in the audience,
right,
just watching, you know, watching the show.
Yeah. Well, they're actual partners with American media, yes, right?
So, okay. So, I mean, again, not blaming anyone, but I was kind of like disappointed. Like, now I'm shut out because they're making this movie. And then I see the movie and it looks somewhat ripped off from things I've done, or just repetitive of things I've done. And it doesn't look real to me. And I just was not motivated to go and see it.
Yeah.
Again, I admit I could be wrong about all of this.
I'll give you my opinion, because I thought about you preparing for this podcast. I was really curious, watching your work, what you would think about it, your critique. Let me just tell you, you know, my story is that I was really rooting for it, being a fan of bodybuilding. You know,
right.
That I, like a lot of us in the industry, we were really rooting for this to, you know, really expose the bodybuilding world to a larger audience, wanting it to be another Pumping Iron. But I have to tell you, you know, seeing the clips and how it's promoted, there was nothing that made me, well, first of all, the distribution, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't available anywhere close to me that I was willing to, you know,
Okay,
that's number one. And then when I kind of read, because I'm on out there, bodybuilding message boards, and then it was available on iTunes. You know, I went to iTunes to pay for it, to download, and just nothing gave me that final click, right, to commit to watching it, right? But now, I don't know if you know this, everybody, now it's on Netflix, right? So now you have no excuse to watch it.
I have it in my queue.
Okay.
I have it in my Netflix queue.
Right. And I have to tell you, I can't tell you how disappointed. It could not keep my interest. And the, you know, Kai Greene part was probably the most interesting, I guess. But to me, I've seen it before, right? It had that same feel. And, you know, I think if there was one breakout star, it was probably him. Wouldn't you agree? If there's anybody who got mileage of it, is that kind of the word you hear?
Absolutely. He's the most interesting bodybuilder
exactly.
out there right now.
And I really think that was the challenge with it, is they didn't make these guys interesting at all. And I was thinking about you preparing for this podcast, how you would have torn it apart and you would have constructed it, right? So I'm curious to hear.
I wonder, though, because here's one of the problems that I've been encountering in my documentary filmmaking since working with my brother. I have not been able to achieve the level of trust and candidness that I have with my brother and my family and even Jennifer, you know, his girlfriend at the time, who understood what I was doing and understood that they had to forget that I was there. I think people are just far too aware of the camera, and they start playing to the camera and they start self-editing, and you don't get reality that way.
Well, let's get back to that trust. You know, you talk about the bodybuilder and fitness. Like I said, I think that's an element that is missing and also draws people into this, right? When I do these podcasts, I have to tell you is that, I mean, this is not a got you podcast, this series of interviews.
Right.
I just want to introduce, if there's one angle, I want to know about the personal stories, what makes the person so dedicated and so amazing at bodybuilding and fitness, if there's any angle. I'm not trying to catch them, gotcha type of moments. It's nothing like that. And what I do, because there's a lot of, they don't want to be in this position. They don't trust this position that I found. And so one thing I do is I say, hey, look, you know, I'll make them comfortable by the questions that I ask, but I give them the right to refusal. If you don't like it, I won't publish it.
So I do the same thing. I give everyone, I say, just be yourself. Just let it all fly. I will show you the finished edit. And if you don't like it, we'll edit things out.
Right. So, I mean, do you find that that's, you know, you got these stars who want this publicity, but there's that, you know, kind of fear, lack of trust when you want to step into their world?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I have had a few of them take advantage of that where, you know, the finished edit was there and they go, no, take that part out and that part out. And of course, it's always the best parts.
Right, right. You know, I know exactly what you're talking about because, and by confidentially, you're a stand-up guy. You're not going to. You know,
no,
tell you what the part is. You're not going to even tell us what the part is because that would be,
no,
you know, right?
I can't.
But I'll tell you, I did this one podcast. I mean, it was the most amazing in ways that people will not, it would blow you away. Why, I, from a personal development, human nature, it was amazing, right? But the person, I won't even say male or female to keep the anonymity, right? They didn't like how they came across. And I'm a man of my word, and it never got published, right? But it would have been an amazing thing to hear, right? So,
and it's amazing because they let their guard down.
Well, they're just being them, right?
They
they're not
their
filtering themselves. Sometimes they
it.
Can't filter themselves because they only think one way, and that mm-hmm. is the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
So that, we both encounter the same thing.
Right, right,
so,
right.
So, you know, I think, you know, to answer your question, would I have been able to do a better job with Generation Iron? I don't think so, because
okay.
I don't think these guys would have really let me see the real story. They were ready to present this docudrama like Pumping Iron was, where they're creating personas and characters and playing the characters against each other, you know, based in somewhat in reality, but not entirely. And they were comfortable with that.
And not doing a convincing job of it. I mean, I just...
Because they're not actors.
Right. Well, I listen, I mean, editing, like, for example, I know that I listened to an interview with Mike Katz recently from Pumping Iron,
yeah.
and he was really upset about how he was portrayed with losing
yeah, like
the
a
shirt.
Fool.
Right, right, right. But that was an editing job,
yeah.
right? It wasn't him acting, and I just think that, you know, Generation Iron may have missed the mark, but it brings up a question, you know, you being somewhat close to Kai. How much do you think of the Phil Heath, even though that was shot the year before, but that was the build up that rivalry? Do you believe that what happened on stage, that confrontation was real, or was it staged? What do you think?
I asked Kai about that.
Okay.
Straight up, privately. And he was very evasive. He didn't say yes or no, but from my point of view, that was the year that he did the confrontation. This was the past one. That was being shot by NBC.
Oh, okay, right.
For television. It didn't make it to television.
Right.
I'll tell you that story in a
right.
second.
Right.
So NBC now, this past year, had a lock on everything. And again, I couldn't shoot. But that's okay. Look, if you were a producer for NBC, having to shoot this strange, weird sport that you know a lot of people aren't really that familiar with and not really that into and think is kind of strange and weird to begin with, what would you do?
Sure.
You would try to pump it up. You would try to, you know, make those sort of reality show things happen so that it was more interesting. And I truly believe that those guys were coached backstage to say some of those things. I know, I can tell that Bob Chicarillo was in on it because his questions were leading. He had a leading question where he says, name Kai Greene, name three reasons why you are going to be the next Mr. Olympia. And Kai came up with reasons.
Right.
Good
but
reasons,
the response was amazing, right? Brilliant.
Right. But then he turns to Phil Heath and he goes, Phil, now give us three reasons why you're going to be the next Mr. Olympia. And Phil goes, 2011, 2012, 2013. It was too perfect.
Yeah, drop the mic.
Too perfect. Yeah, drop the mic. The answer was too perfect, and the question was a setup for the answer. Come on, give me a break. I'm not
yeah.
that dumb.
Well, I have to tell you is that.
But if I was the producer, I would do that too.
Sure, sure. I have to tell you this. I was leaning towards that. You know, well, Kai is an artistic nature himself. You know, in all facets of his life, I was kind of thinking, I don't know if NBC wanted him to do that. Maybe he wanted to do that. I thought it was
Maybe
there.
He did.
I thought it was somewhat real. Until I saw the first 10 minutes of Pumping Iron, and then it made me think about the whole...
Generation Iron.
Generation Iron, yeah. What did I say? Pumping Iron?
No, yeah.
Generation Iron, and I saw, you know, how they built up Ben Pakulski and then Branch Warren from the very beginning, and then at their press conference, you know, here's this guy, Ben Pakulski, who really isn't a contender, just going right after him, right out of the chute. Then I thought, hey, wait a second, right? It made me kind of look back on that, right? But I know that George Farah, you know, did say that it was set up, but anyway. And then Bob Chickrell said, no, it wasn't. So, I mean, who knows? Tell us about the story. Why didn't that hit NBC? I know a lot of us bodybuilding fans thought, oh, this is going to be our day. And even though it's MSNBC, right, one of the deep cable channels, it was, you know, and then we all waited and boom, it wasn't there. Right. What's that? You know that story behind that?
I know a little bit of it because I was a little bit inside on that because I was obviously preparing MuscleMed's commercials to run during that show.
I see.
So I was in contact with the people who were putting it together. Okay, I'm getting the commercial ready. It has to be this long, et cetera, and so on. And then it was suddenly canceled. And the story that I heard, you know, through the grapevine was that powers that be of bodybuilding went to see the rough cut that NBC had done. And they felt that NBC was not being respectful to the sport of bodybuilding, and they were making it look silly and stupid. They were cutting it in such a way that bodybuilding's top dogs did not like. And there was a dispute, and they said, we do not give you permission to show this.
Wow.
And that was the end of it. That was the story that I heard, and that went around. I don't know if that was true or not, but that's what I heard.
Well, that definitely takes back the frame of the control rather than us being dumped by the major networks, right? I mean,
it was our decision. It was bodybuilding's decision.
Well, I can see that because, I don't know, I know you go to these shows. I mean, man, the entertainment value, if you're not a participant and you don't have that vested interest in the competitor, you know, it isn't the most exciting. Do you even call it a sport? I'm curious.
I do, for lack of a better term, but it's really a combination of a sport and art.
What do you think about guys that they've been training for 5 years and they got a social media site and maybe they're the local champion and they refer to themselves as athletes? I mean, what do you think about that? You have an opinion?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think they are athletes. I mean, they're using their bodies in athletic ways in the gym, but then they present them as an artist does.
Right.
So, but again, it's still a physical thing. So, you know, we were playing a little loose with the terms athlete and sport, but I think it's close enough.
Okay.
It's close enough. But I would always say sport/art.
Right.
You know?
Right. So you have all this talent. You come from the bodybuilding world from a totally different angle. Again, I think that's a major reason for your success. Do you have aspirations of taking these filmmaking skills, something that's totally unrelated? Do you have this film, the screenplay in your mind that before you take your last breath that you're going to present to the world? Any of those aspirations?
I've never been interested in making films from scripts. That's not my ultimate goal. I really enjoy doing documentary work. I really enjoy waiting for people to let their guard down and to capture those real unscripted moments. To me, that's a thrill. And it's sometimes it's few and far between. And it's like big game hunting. I mean, you hunt and hunt and hunt and shoot and shoot and shoot. And then suddenly something happens that's real and everyone forgets that the camera's there and you capture it. It happened a lot with the Raising the Bar series and quite a lot with Overkill. Not so much, you know, with some of the more commercial projects. Yes, I would love to work outside of the world of bodybuilding. What that project should be, I really couldn't tell you. It's got to be something where people are passionate and where they devote a lot of themselves to something. And we just dig into finding, you know, why and how it affects them. I have not, you know, gotten any offers. Like, I get a lot of offers within bodybuilding to make more things like I've already made. And I kind of, you know, shove them aside because, first of all, I'm already doing that work all the time. And I'd like to do some work outside. So, yes, it's a goal, but it's not such a hard and fast goal that I have, you know, steps that I'm taking towards that. Maybe once Raising the Bar 4 is done, because this is such a big project with so much footage that's really been occupying my mind for the past few years, even though I've only gotten to really work on it in the past several months. I want to get that done. I think it's an important documentary. I think it'll be really powerful and good. And once that's done, I think I'll be like,
Okay,
now where do we go? And then I can start from the basic, right? The basic thought. Let's think of something. Let's imagine it. Let's start to plan our steps towards it. Right. But as of right now, I know I've got to spend a lot of time with raising the bar four to get it out there.
So how do you see the next 20 years of your life playing out, Mike?
Eventually, my real goal is to have a production company where I'm not the guy, you know, lugging the heavy cameras and lights around anymore.
Because, right.
You know, I'm 53 years old at this point.
Uh-huh.
You know, and although I'm in good shape and I work out at the gym to stay in shape for this job. So
right.
I can, because you're battling a couple of different things. One is you're battling age, and when you're on a shoot, it's exhausting. You're on your feet all day long, carrying around heavy equipment. You got to move lights across the room quickly, so I need to stay limber and in shape for that. And the other half of it is you're sitting in a chair in front of a computer 10 hours a day.
Right, right.
And very sedentary. So I've got to break that up with exercise and keep myself healthy. But again, 53 years old, how long can I do that? How long do I want to do that physically? I'd like to be a director, producer, and have young, talented camera people and editors working under my umbrella.
Yeah.
And I'm actually making some small forays into that area right now. I'm working with some young people on some side projects that are helping them with their projects, and they come and help me. Like for Train with Kai 2 weeks ago, I have a young filmmaker come up from Pennsylvania, and he and I have worked together several times, so we have a really great working relationship. It's actually kind of cool. We're both wired up, he and I, with cameras and sound equipment. I have two microphones on Kai and the kid he's training, so I'm listening to them. I have a microphone on me, and that goes into an earphone in my second camera operator.
Ah.
So I'm listening and I'm directing at the same time. I'm whispering into my lapel, all right, you get around the other side. You shoot Kai while I shoot Steven, because they're having a really interesting conversation. I said, oh, let's just get the two cross angles of the conversation. And he moves around. That way I can direct him. So that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, that is a sweet setup there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very cool setup. And again, just out of necessity, we had to come up with that.
Right, right.
But
right.
I would definitely like to, you know, to be directing several. It would be great to have like a monitor off to the side where I'm just sitting watching the several camera angles and directing both of them by microphone. You know,
yeah.
Other camera. There's just so many ways to do it. But basically, I want to be the producer and director of my own production company. And I am making steps towards that as we speak.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, hey, tell everybody where your websites, where they can contact you, what your email address is.
Yes.
Is there a mailing list they can get on so that you can alert them of all your productions? Tell
absolutely,
us.
Absolutely. You go to MikePulsanella.com. You can sign up for the mailing list there, or you can send me an email at mike@mikepulsanella.com, and then I'll have your mailing address, and I add it to the list, and I send out email blasts every once in a while. Not too often. I don't spam people, and I never share the names. I never share the email addresses, ever. They're just for me, just for my projects.
And your Facebook pages, because, again, I know you talk about motivation, a lot of that insight that you shared. You do that from time to time.
To do that.
Yeah, are you on Instagram, Twitter? Where else on social media can they find you?
Instagram and Twitter. At Mike's Video is the Twitter. Instagram is Mike Pulsanella. I have two Facebook pages. The personal one filled up. It's completely full. Mike Pulsanella is full. But I have Mike Pulsanella Video Productions fan page that you can like, and then you get the notifications that way.
Awesome. Well, this has been – you got passion just – oozing out of every pore of your body, Mike. I mean, that's what's so attractive being around you. Just have that energy. Thank you so much for being on this Bodybuilding and Fitness podcast and sharing your view of this bodybuilding and fitness world with us. For Mike Pulsanella, I am Skip LaCour. Train hard and think big.
You're listening to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. So, you have your bodybuilding and training efforts going in the right direction. That's awesome. Are you now ready to take your entire life to the next level too? Sure, it takes a lot of focus and discipline to build a great body, but that's not going to automatically translate into an incredible overall life too, unless you have a clear-cut vision for exactly what you want for your life and an effective plan that you really believe in to make it happen. Maybe you've already realized this,
Your body has improved dramatically. People compliment you all the time, but you still feel that there's something missing. What's your plan to become more than just a great body and create an amazing, balanced, overall quality of life that you can be proud of and confidently work toward? One-on-one peak performance coaching specialist Skip LaCour will help you channel all that your hard work, discipline, and abilities to become more than just muscles and help you build a life filled with confidence, passion, and purpose. You can have it all. Confidence in every social situation, wealth, opportunity, freedom, love, and connection, along with your impressive physical body and amazing health. When you know the strategies to put it all together and execute them on a continual basis, go to SkipLaCourCoaching.com and see the different one-on-one life coaching plans Skip LaCour has to help you. Set up a free coaching session to see if this exclusive next-level one-on-one coaching program is right for you by sending Skip an email at Skip at SkipLaCourCoaching.com.